Good morning. It's 8:01, Monday, June 7th, and you're listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM. Good morning and welcome to the Master Gardener Hour, the shortest hour in radio. Good morning. This is John Duke. I'll be your host until 9 o'clock. I have my wife Amy with me today, and we are proud to be kicking off our summer programming schedule on WAIF with a new show, The Master Gardener Hour, which was supposed to happen last week, but the transmitter was down. So if you tuned in and heard the dreaded dead air, well, it's not really dead. It was just quiet. Today we're going to talk about some timely garden topics and trivia and outline some of the topics you can expect to hear on the show later on this summer. I also have a guest, Mary Ann Westendorf from the Cincinnati Civic Garden Center, to tell us all about the community garden program in Cincinnati. WAIF FM, as a community radio station, serves only to open its airwaves to responsible divergent points of view. The opinions expressed during the Master Gardener Hour do not reflect the views of WAIF, its staff, or Board of Trustees. The opinions expressed reflect my own views or the views of my guests, which may change at any moment. It's 8:04, and you're listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM. The real stepchild radio, what radio is meant to be. My theme music for the show is Coconuts from the CD Natural Bounty by Mystical Moods. Before I begin with Amy and Marianne, I'd like to thank our underwriter. This hour of Master Gardener, our program, is brought to you in part by contributions from the Greater Cincinnati Master Gardener Association. The mission of the Master Gardener Association is to provide horticultural opportunities for ongoing education, volunteering, beautifying the community, gaining personal development and leadership skills, socializing, and sharing of knowledge. To learn more about the Master Gardener program in your area, call your county extension office. If you have any suggestions or comments regarding this show, we invite you to write us or call at the station. Send your letters to WAIF FM, 1434 East McMillan Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45206, or call us at 513-749-1444. I'd like to ask you to hold your calls this hour until sometime when we're playing music. Thank you very much. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, John.
Thanks for joining me.
I'm very happy to be here.
You're going to bring a lot of good gardening information because you've been working in the yard. I want to tell our listeners that Amy and I garden together a lot at home. We have a very good gardening relationship. I'm the master gardener and she's the boss, and it works out great that way.
I'm glad you think so.
I just wanted to mention, you remember when we came down here last August, Linda Kreidler on her show, Digging In, invited us to come down and talk about daylilies.
Yes.
And we came down, and that was the first time we had been on the radio or at WAIF, and it was really a lot of fun. And I found out about the summer programming opportunities that they have here, and I was well trained, I hope, by Linda.
I think you were.
I'm sure she's listening this morning. If she's up yet, I don't know.
Oh, I'm sure she is.
We came down and had fun, and then I hung around with Linda for a lot of her shows and actually filled in for her on a couple of times.
And I came with you.
Yeah, you sure did. You've been a big help. I got the idea to have a gardening talk show and took it to the Master Gardener Association, and they thought it was a good idea, so they agreed to support the program and as a way of promoting good gardening practices and promoting the Master Gardener program. Okay, what's happening this week?
Oak leaf hydrangeas are really
showing
spectacular,
really
pretty.
Yeah.
I noticed that we have about three or four different colors of astilbe blooming now. A pink, a dark pink, a lilac, a white. We have some fringed bleeding heart. The ground cover sedums are blooming. And I notice a lot of Stellas open in the community.
Yeah, they've been blooming for several weeks now in some places.
And we have a few daylilies coming along.
Yeah, they're coming. What you said 10 yesterday?
10 varieties yesterday.
Yeah, out of about 500. Uh-huh. So they're just getting started.
They're not real colorful yet.
Not yet, no. No. And the cicadas are still singing.
Yes, they are. I kind of think they're not quite as prolific as they were.
I don't know.
I'm not sure, but...
It's hard to tell.
It's hard to tell.
You've been picking up little leaflets.
Leaflets,
all over the yard.
That the
cicadas kill the tips of the branches, and then the wind blows them off, and they fall down all over the place.
Yes.
And we pick them up and shred them up and put them in a compost pile. Eggs and all.
Right.
We may have cicadas coming out of our compost pile. You know, I don't know.
Not for
17 years, right?
Pile set for 17 years.
Marianne, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Tell us, you're on. Tell us what's your position at Civic Garden Center?
I'm the Neighborhood Gardens Coordinator. And do we want to say what the Civic Garden Center is?
Sure.
Civic Garden Center is a nonprofit. We do a lot of what master gardeners do. We're a horticultural resource center. The Neighborhood Gardens program is one of our outreach programs, and it was started in 1981. To date, we've helped establish over 63 community gardens.
Wow.
And a community garden, for people who may not be familiar with that, can be anything from just beautifying a little vacant corner in your neighborhood to taking over an entire lot or more than one lot and turn it into a food-producing garden where people who may not have yard space can come and rent a vegetable plot or flowers.
We were lucky enough to come on a tour a couple years ago, and I still remember one of the young men who was growing his own carrots and very proud
Ramon.
Of them. And I remember him pulling this carrot and giving it to a very small child and saying, mm-hmm. eat this, it'll taste good.
That was Ramon. He was about 12, and Katie Parker is one of our gardeners, and she had a plot at the Martin Luther King Garden. And Ramon was just hanging out in the park, and Katie let him plant carrot seeds in her plot. And you know, it's like the miracle happened. He pulled that carrot out of the ground. I've seen this with my great-niece and great-nephew.
Uh-huh.
Like, kids just, they don't have a clue today where their food comes from.
Yeah.
So it's a good time to tell about the Summer Sprouts program,
which actually
starts today. We have three community gardens, actually four, where we have programming Monday through Friday, and then, Sunday through Friday, every day but Saturday. And we go down, and it's just a drop-in garden. We open the gates. The kids know when we're going to be there. They come in. We have two of them downtown, one in Over the Rhine, one in Pendleton. We have one in North Avondale and one in Walnut Hills. So
wow.
If you want to volunteer with the Summer Sprouts program, we are desperately looking for volunteers.
I bet you are, yeah.
Call the Garden Center.
So the volunteers would go at prearranged times,
right,
and kind of oversee what's going on.
Right, they help Allie Maymore, our youth ed coordinator, and we've got some summer interns that'll mm-hmm. be there, and a group of really dedicated volunteers, but we can always use more.
Sure, sure. So if you're interested in volunteering, you can call 221-0981.
Right, 513-221-0981. Mm-hmm. And ask for Connie Booth. She's our volunteer coordinator.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. Now, so you do both flower beautification plots as
right,
can be a
community
garden?
Right, we have several community gardens that you would never know they were a community garden driving by. You may think that someone
yeah.
just took it on themselves.
And
to
then you have food production
right.
plots. Where
we also have some school gardens.
Oh, okay.
There's a new garden at the Sands Montessori. Sands used to be down in the West End, and
uh-huh.
the kids would come over and garden in the West End Community Garden. So when they relocated to Mount Washington, they've got lots of acreage out there.
Yeah.
So they're in the process of putting in several different gardens.
Do the kids bring their parents with them to help garden?
Not as much as we'd like to see. You mean in the children's gardens?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Unfortunately, or fortunately, however you look at it, the parents look at the sessions in the gardens as a break for themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like you know, free daycare. But we do have several parents that are involved, but we'd like to see more of that.
Mm-hmm.
But the sessions are teaching experiences for the kids to learn
right.
how to garden and plant.
But mostly giving the kids a chance to have a backyard experience.
Yeah.
Because there aren't a lot of backyards in Over the Rhine or Pendleton. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, we've got nice grass in the Race Street Garden that the kids can run through, play in the sprinkler. But we definitely have a teaching, learning experience, you know, teaching them how to grow food.
And so the kids really do the maintenance and the work.
They do most of it.
What about, go ahead.
Well, there's always, you know, like fun activities too. A lot of crafts and
okay.
and games and reading stories and
okay.
it's
just enjoying the garden basically.
Yeah,
yeah, that's neat.
Mm-hmm.
How is it funded? I mean, you've got to buy plants and seeds and fencing, I presume.
We don't have to buy plants or seeds. We get most of that stuff donated. But,
uh-huh.
Writing grants. And while I'm on grants, for any community gardeners that are listening out there, we have a grant writing workshop Wednesday evening at the Civic Garden Center from 6 to 7:30. Erica Ruger from the Community Action Agency is coming in to teach community gardeners how to fund their own projects.
Oh, that's great.
So, you know, we get funding from a lot of foundations, and the Civic Garden Center has members that help support the Neighborhood Gardens program.
Yeah. You had a series, and I attended one of the sessions about fundraising
mm-hmm.
at the Civic Garden Center.
Right.
A couple of months ago or whenever it was, and mm-hmm. I forget the gentleman's name, but he was a fundraising expert, and he was telling some amazing stories about auctions and how auctions raise money. And the thing that blew me away is that he said in one auction they sold a puppy for $4,000.
Maybe it's time to have an auction.
Yeah. I thought that was just incredible. People must go nuts at those auctions.
Yeah, and, you know, we get very creative. You kind of lose your pride, and
yeah.
you're not afraid to ask for money.
Uh-huh.
Never hurts to ask
sure.
because it's amazing what people will give you.
Yeah.
And
what about the material that's wasted in the community gardens? Do you compost it
every
at all of
community
them?
Garden? When we build a new garden, that's one of the first things we do is either designate a composting area or
uh-huh.
we build bins.
Okay, great.
So we've got all sorts of bins in the community gardens. You know, our favorite is the one that the Hamilton County Environmental Services
they had their bin sale.
Well, no, they have the plan that's in the master composting book.
And oh, okay.
We actually make a three bin system.
The three
it's 12
bin.
Foot long
okay.
and 4 foot deep, 4 foot high.
Yeah.
So you've got, you know, three
sure.
sections, so it's
yeah.
easy to turn. Because the community gardens, after they're up and running, they do generate a lot of fantastic
oh, yeah.
compost material.
Right. And then, of course, you use that back on the garden, which
definitely.
Makes wonderful
right, because,
vegetables.
You know, the soil, we have raised beds in most gardens, and
uh-huh.
it just seems to disappear every
yeah.
year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're constantly adding.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. We put in, we don't grow many vegetables at our garden at home, but we put in what's called a door bed. It's, I think it's called a door bed because it's about the size of a door. It's like 3 feet wide and maybe 7 or 8 feet long. I think ours is a little bigger than that, but,
yes.
But that's the idea. And you, dig out, the soil down, maybe a foot or so,
mm-hmm.
and you fill it up with compost. And then you put the topsoil back on top,
right.
And it's a raised bed, raised a little bit. And then you plant your vegetables in that, and the roots go down to get the compost underneath.
And you also have a compost bin in the middle.
Right in the middle.
That
yeah.
you're adding material to,
mm-hmm.
and it's watered through the compost bin so that
yeah.
And the vegetables look really nice.
Yeah, our tomatoes are going crazy.
We've got tomatoes on the tomato plant.
Yeah. Yeah,
and the carrot tops are really pretty.
We got a big tomato out there on the early girl.
I'm watching it.
Yeah,
for it to start turning.
I don't know. We may have to have green fried tomatoes if we can't wait.
We could do that. That's doable.
Because it's big enough to eat. But that's about the extent of our vegetable gardening at home. But I know the kids really love to work in the soil and see how it's done and.
Yeah.
Take a lot.
Little
of
ones just like digging in the dirt.
Oh, yeah.
For worms.
Yeah, worms. Oh,
down
yeah.
At Ray Street, they call the worms big juicies.
Big juicies. That's
Can
good.
I find a big juicy?
Do they put them back?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And slugs. They love slugs.
Oh, my goodness.
One little girl that just finds a slug and puts it on her belly and lets it crawl all over her. And I'm sure she goes home with a slime that her mother's like, whoa.
I don't know whether belly slugs are the same as head lice or not. No, I shouldn't have said that. Anyway, if I wanted to have a community garden in my community, what would I have to do?
Okay, in order to get assistance from the Civic Garden Center, we offer a 17-week training series. It's called Community Garden Development Training. And we ask that people go through this training. Like if you had a group, maybe there were five of you that mm-hmm. wanted to start a garden, you could all take turns going to classes as
okay.
long as somebody from your group attended at least 11 of the classes of the 17.
Okay.
And we teach you everything.
This is the kids and the adults or both or what?
This is more for adults. I mean,
okay.
We have some high school kids that
okay.
went through this year from Dater Montessori.
Mm-hmm.
They want to put a community garden there. No, Clark Montessori. I'm sorry. They have a garden. But it teaches you everything, how to organize the community, how to recruit gardeners. We have a seed starting class, fundraising class, basic botany, design, construction. We have a couple of electives. We have pruning, fundraising, soils composting, which you
wow.
taught and did a
yeah.
fantastic mm-hmm. job. Marvin from Marvin's Garden taught organic practices, and that was an unbelievable class. That was so much fun.
He's good.
So we're kind of heading towards the end. We have, like I said, the grant writing workshop is Wednesday evening, and people can come to that whether they're in the training series or not. And then in the fall, we have a really fun class. We hold it down at Cincinnati Cooks where we teach people how to actually do canning.
That's great.
So preserving the harvest, that's a lot of fun. Cynthia Brown teaches that class.
Mm-hmm.
And putting your garden and your tools bed. So classes are going to start up again in the fall. So if people are interested, you don't have to necessarily want to start a community garden. You may just want to learn more about gardening.
Uh-huh.
Everything that we teach can be applied to your backyard garden as well.
Sure.
Or if you want to get involved as a volunteer or just become a community gardener, the classes are a lot of fun. The group always forms, a strong bond, and it's a lot
yeah,
of fun.
We have
a good time at these classes.
That's good. Yeah.
So they can find out more about the classes. The class schedule will be posted on our website, which is civicgardencenter.org.
Okay. Civic Garden Center, all one word.
One word.
.org. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, yeah. That's great. So how many people do you expect to show up for this class in the fall? Do you have a target of how many more gardens you're looking for? Or do you?
We usually build about maybe 3 to 5 gardens per year.
Per year.
I think we're going to probably get 5 new gardens.
Okay.
As a result of the training this year.
Okay. So you'd have maybe 25, 30 people in that
we've
class.
We've had over 83 people attend at least one class.
Wow.
So some people might be interested in, like, the seed starting class. We taught how to build a light rack to get a jump start on the gardening season.
Uh-huh.
There were a lot of people that just attended that class that really weren't interested in community gardening, which is fine.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Yeah, but we you know, on average, maybe we have 20 people at a class. But I think there were 43 that attended that class.
Mm.
But that still spreads the participation.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
It lets people know who we are and what we do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. It's 8:22, and I think I'd like to shift gears here just a minute. Yesterday was the 60th anniversary of D-Day, and there's been a lot of specials on TV. I don't know whether y'all have seen any of them or not,
yes.
But it's pretty interesting, some of the stories and things that have come out of D-Day and World War II just this past weekend. D-Day invasion, I saw where there was over 4,000 ships, over 8,000 airplanes, and they unloaded 250,000 troops in the first 24 hours along a 50-mile strip of the Normandy beaches. That had to be the original shock and awe.
I think so.
And I think the I want to play a little piece of music here just in honor of D-Day that I found. It's My Beautiful America by the Charlie Daniels Band. It's on his CD, Freedom and Justice for All. So we'll see if we can start that.
Have you ever spent the late afternoon watching the purple shadows deepen in the Arizona desert? Or seen a herd of elk plow their way through waist-deep snow on a cold Colorado dawn? Did you ever see the sun go down in Hawaii or see the stormy waves break over the rock-bound coast of Maine? Or have you ever seen an eagle fly up out of the mists of Alaska or a big October moon hanging full over the still Dakota Badlands? Have you ever tasted the gumbo in New Orleans, barbecue in Carolina, or the chicken wings in Buffalo? Have you ever had Brunswick stew in Macon, or cornbread in Birmingham, or brisket slow-cooked over hill country mesquite wood? Did you ever drink the water from a gurgling branch in Utah, or stand on the mountain above El Paso del Norte and see the lights twinkling clear over into Mexico? Did you ever jingle horses in the pre-dawn stillness of a perfect Texas day and watch their shod hooves kicking up sparks on the volcanic rock? Or tended a trot line on a foggy Carolina morning? Or heard the distant song of a lovesick whippoorwill in a pristine Tennessee late night? Have you seen the faces on Mount Rushmore or stood at the Vietnam Monument? Have you ever crossed the mighty Mississippi or been to the daddy of them all in Cheyenne, Wyoming? Or seen the mighty balls run out on the football field on a chilly autumn afternoon? Did you ever see the Chicago skyline from Lakeshore Drive at night? Or the New England foliage in the fall? Or the summer beauty of the Shenandoah Valley? Or Indiana covered with new snow? Did you ever see a herd of wild horses running free across the empty spaces in Nevada? Or caught a walleye pike out of a cold Wisconsin stream, or marveled at the tall ships docked in the harbor at Baltimore? Did you ever see the early morning dew sparkling on the bluegrass, or the wind stir the wheat fields on a hot Kansas afternoon, or driven the lonely stretches of old Route 66? Have you ever heard the church bells peal their call to worship on an early Sunday in some small town in the deep south? Or passed through the redwood forest as the sun was going down? Have you ever been to Boise or Baxley or Beaufort or Billings? Have you ever passed through Sanford or Suffolk or San Angelo? Have you ever seen the falls at Niagara, the Ice Palace in St. Paul, or the Gateway to the West? This then is America, the land God blesses with everything. And no Eiffel Tower, no Taj Mahal, no Alps, no Andes, no native hut, nor royal palace can rival her awesome beauty, her diverse population, her monolithic majesty. America the free, America the mighty, America the beautiful. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, that was, I thought that was a nice piece of music.
That's a great song.
For D-Day.
It's a great message.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw a program just last night about, they called them DD tanks. And they had a whole bunch of them. And what they were like a regular tank, army tank. But they had a canvas shell that they'd lift up. And so they would float. And they ran them off these landing crafts into the water. And they'd go about 3 or 4 miles an hour, and they'd go and land on the beach. And they were supposed to be there first before the troops came in. Mm. But on Omaha Beach, 27 out of 29 of them sank on the way in. And so that those guys at Omaha Beach didn't have the protection of the tanks, which was a problem.
Yeah.
And they had done plenty of practice and everything with this equipment, but apparently there was a current, and the guys in these DD tanks knew where they were supposed to go because it was a steeple up on the hill, and that was what they were sighting on, and so they kept turning to head for that steeple, so they would land on the right place that they were supposed to on the beach, and when they would turn, they were getting sideways with the waves coming in, and they just got swamped. And so there was only two that made it. There was a lot of stories. One of the kind of ironic ones that I heard last night, too, was Rommel, the German general, was really upset because Hitler didn't approve his anti-aircraft gun that he wanted to protect that area, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
And so he decided to go to Berlin on June the 6th to talk to Hitler, and also that's happened to be Rommel's wife's birthday. So we're celebrating D-Day, though, not Rommel's wife's birthday, I guess.
And with the stories I heard, Oliver North tells someone that when he interviewed all the veterans from World War II, that they would not talk about their experience if a family member was present in the room, that they would answer his questions with two words or very shortly, and that he would have to ask for time alone with the veteran before they would open up and talk to him about their experiences, because they were protecting their family members. And I found that to be true of my dad, who was a veteran, and he was over there, and I have family letters that were written in that time frame, and I looked up because I wanted to know when he actually went in there, and I found one from June 7th that he was still in the States. July 30th, he was in England, somewhere in England. Mm-hmm. That's how they were headed.
Yeah.
And then by September 30th, somewhere in France.
Oh.
And that's the first time I put together the dates with my dad.
Well, that's neat.
And it was.
I know you'd enjoy having those letters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It is 8:30, and you're listening to the Master Gardener Hour, the shortest hour in radio, with Amy and John Duke and Marianne Westendorf on WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM. You can listen to the Master Gardener Hour here every Monday from 8 to 9 a.m. Amy, you want to read some public service announcements and
I
promos?
I would like to, John.
Okay.
The demand for Organically grown food and fiber is growing rapidly as many become aware of the benefits to the health of the environment. Choosing organic products encourages farmers to use a system of agriculture that protects the soil and water and avoids the use of toxic pesticides. Now finding organic products is easy. Just log on to www.ota.com. Call Hamilton County's Household Hazardous Waste Hotline at 333-4700 to find out more about where and how you can safely reuse or recycle your hazardous products. The Hamilton County Department of Environmental Services has a list of locations that accept various types of household hazardous waste for reuse, recycling, or proper disposal. Hear the best in traditional bluegrass every Saturday morning from 8 to 11 a.m. on the Cut in the Grass Show. Your host, Lee Elliott, and Moonbeam will feature the music of Bill Monroe, the Stanley Brothers, Jimmy Martin, the Osborne Brothers, and many others each week. Tune in to WAIF on Saturdays starting at 8 a.m. for the finest mix of bluegrass music.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Let's see, we're going to talk about some more gardening topics. Have the community gardens been bothered much by the cicadas?
The community gardens haven't been bothered by the cicadas. Maybe the gardeners have.
Yeah.
I personally love the cicadas. You know, I've been waiting 17 years for them to come back.
I think they're fascinating.
Do you remember them from before? I don't, but we weren't gardening then.
This is my third experience with this 17-year cicada.
You've been gardening a long time.
Yeah.
Or
well,
in different places.
I remember I learned to drive the first... Well, the cicadas, they were here in 1952. I was born in 1952, but after the cicadas were gone, so I had to wait 16 years, 17 years. So I was driving in the car with my father. I think I still had my temporary license. And a cicada flew in the window, and I, you know, reacted, "Woo!" He said, "Pull over. Get this bug out. If you don't handle it and you don't get comfortable with this cicada, uh-huh. you're not driving until they're over." I'm like, I'm not afraid of them. I'm not afraid of them. Now I, like, wait for them to come because I have a pond with snakes and turtles and fish and frogs. I'm a bird nut. Uh-huh. I have chickens. So, you know, the cicadas are...
Yeah.
They're big fun in Madisonville.
Oh, the birds are getting fat now, that's for sure.
They are. And we have a couple of small dogs, and one of them has an appetite, and she... gets, I think, two or three on walks. But I will say this, they haven't bothered me as much as I thought they might, but this is the first year I have ever gardened wearing a hat.
You don't like them?
Don't like them in your hair.
I don't want them in my hair. I don't want them in my hair.
Yeah, I don't mind them anywhere, but, like, in my ears.
Yeah.
That would be tough.
Yeah. I want to assure our gardening listeners that... don't worry about the cicadas. They're not going to do any serious damage to your trees and shrubs. They will prune them.
Right, free pruning.
And they do a pretty good job. The way the pruning works with the cicadas is they pretty much know what they're doing. They generally lay their eggs, and you can see that now. If you go out and find a tree or a shrub where they've and look on the underneath side of the stem out near the tip, you can see these little slash marks where they've laid their eggs. It's pretty neat, and the eggs must be really tiny because I've opened those up and I can't find anything that looks like it must be microscopic, you know. Mm-hmm. But what they do, the way plants work is there's a what's called a dominant bud, and that's the growth that grows out on the end of the stem. And when that dominant bud is there, it manufactures a growth regulating substance that goes back down the stem called auxin that tells the other buds, the side buds, don't grow. And so you get the growth at the end of the stem. That's the way trees and shrubs grow. And what happens then when you cut off that dominant bud or when it dies, the auxin flow stops and the side branches then say, "Oh, we can grow now." And so by doing that pruning out on the tip of the branches, you're actually promoting growth to the tree or the shrub, and you're going, it's going to be fuller, it's going to be better looking next year, you're going to have more leaves, it's going to be a stronger plant. So actually the cicadas help your plants, but you got to go through that awkward period when the when you get the dead tips, and some people think it's kind of unsightly, but it's it doesn't last long.
And then the other benefit is that they add, is it nitrogen, back to the soil, the bodies?
Oh, yeah.
They die off.
Yeah, yeah.
And aerating the soil.
Oh, yeah. You can see those holes. It's amazing. And I don't know what's going to happen to the moles next year, because, you know, the last year and this year, the moles have been all over the place eating cicadas as they came up. So we got a lot of fat moles out there this year, but they're going to go hungry next year again. One of the funny things I heard about cicadas is it's got the scientists really worried, because they don't understand why cicadas just come up using prime numbers, 13 and 17. And they haven't figured out any kind of rationale for in nature for why that should be, you know, on a prime number basis. I thought that was funny.
I laughed.
Some people don't have enough to do, I guess. Okay. Do you you said something earlier about the, when we were talking about D-Day and the music and everything, the Victory Gardens.
Right. Probably what really got the community garden movement started in this country were, you know, people starting Victory Gardens on vacant lots.
Yeah, back during World War II, when everybody had to grow their own food.
Right.
Sometimes, yeah.
And, you know, people just continued doing that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we grew, when I was a kid, I was about 8 or 9 years old during World War II, and I remember we had a garden and grew some vegetables, and I remember we'd have 10 can drives and through the school, and we had big piles of tin cans that we were doing for the war effort, and got our picture in the paper one time even doing that, so I mean, it was a big deal for a little kid. Okay, let me, do you have anything else you want to add about?
I think we need to let people know about the Master Composting classes.
Okay, good,
summer.
Good, yeah.
You help teach at the
sure.
Garden Center. These are free classes. We just ask that you volunteer 15 hours in your community, passing on the knowledge you learned about Master Composting. We team up with Hamilton County Environmental Services. And we have 3 weeks of intensive training that teaches every aspect of composting, including vermicomposting, which is having a plastic bin with worms that you keep in your house and you can compost your kitchen scraps. And you can all take home a wire compost bin. And the dates for these classes are Wednesday.
And a thermometer, too. Don't you get a thermometer? A compost thermometer?
Yeah, you get a compost thermometer. So, do I have the right dates here? July 7th?
That sounds right. Yeah, 7th, 14th, and 21st.
14th and 21st. Mm-hmm. And it's from 3 to 6 p.m. We do ask that you call and register, though, if you plan on attending.
Mm-hmm.
513-221-0981. This is also posted on our website, civicgardencenter.org.
Okay, great.
Then it's off if the July dates don't work for you. We offer it again in October, October 2nd, 9th, and 16th.
Okay.
I think, John, you're teaching all three of those classes, aren't you?
I
put you on the spot on the air.
I'm teaching some of them. I don't know. I think Allie and I are going to teach together in July,
and
then you want me to do the whole thing in October, which is fine. Yeah, if I'm still around. Radio show will be over by then. That'll help a little bit. Make some time available. But this is fun. I hope you all are having fun today. I wanted to call this the Master Gardener Hour, and I wanted to, for people who weren't familiar with what Master Gardening is all about, to tell a little bit about that. In order to become a Master Gardener, you go through about 50 hours of classroom training and then do 50 hours of volunteering. But that varies from county to county somewhat, too. But it started a long time ago, and it's kind of an interesting story. The founding fathers, Washington and Jefferson and Daniel Webster and those guys, were very concerned about agricultural education because a lot of the people that came over to this country in the early days were not really farmers. They were city people from Europe and England and places, and they didn't really know how to grow food. And it started off just almost by... You had to learn from your neighbor or whatnot. And then they started having farmers' institutes, which were 2 to 3 day community events where people got together and shared knowledge about how to grow things. The first College of Agriculture started in Antioch in 1846, and then the second one wasn't until 1855 in Michigan. And then in 1862, just before the Civil War, it was, of course, established the Morrill Act, which established land-grant colleges, where the government gave land to colleges in exchange for teaching agriculture to the farmers in each state. And then there was a second round in 1890 where they created more land-grant colleges. But they found out that there's no substitute for face-to-face agricultural education of farmers. The farmers are either unable or unwilling to use research reports or travel long distances to the land-grant colleges. So this led to the Smith-Lever Act in 1914 that established the county extension. Sorry, had to open the front door. Somebody's coming in.
Multitasking.
I hope it's the next show.
But we are having fun.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So anyway, the extension offices got established in about 1914. And I ran across some interesting numbers, too, that in 1910, 35% of the people in this country were farmers. And even in 1940, 25% of the people were farmers. And that was, of course, just before World War II. Today, it's less than 3%. Wow. So things have changed.
Yes, they have.
But the extension offices have branched out. They don't just teach agriculture anymore. They've branched out into horticulture, home economics. They've got the 4-H programs. And they're involved in community and natural resource development. Does the Civic Garden Center get any help from extension with your community gardens from that standpoint?
We've worked on a couple of projects where they have assisted also, like Dater Montessori. I think the Master Gardeners went and built the raised beds for them. We also benefit greatly most of our volunteers, mm-hmm. or a lot of our volunteers, our Master Gardeners, fulfilling their volunteer requirement
with
us in community
gardens. Okay, so that's a good connection.
We definitely benefit from Master Gardeners.
Okay. Well, apparently in 1973, out in Washington State, there was an extension agent that was just getting overwhelmed with questions. And so he tried to use the media to put out information to folks about gardening and farming. And that didn't work very well. He just got more questions. So then he got some volunteers to help, and that was really the beginning of the Master Gardener program. And in the first year, they had 120 volunteers that served 7,000 clients out there in that program. So that was a pretty good start. Ohio's started their program in 1986, and the Greater Cincinnati Master Gardener program started in 1992. And it was kind of unique because there were several counties and the Civic Garden Center were the sponsoring agencies. It was Hamilton County, Boone, Kenton, and Campbell County in northern Kentucky, and the Civic Garden Center was the sponsoring agencies. And then the Master Gardener Association was formed as soon as we had some Master Gardeners, and they became a sponsor. So that's the way it's been going since 92 until last year. The Ohio and Kentucky program split. Everybody wanted to do their own thing. But the Master Gardener Association still takes members from both sides of the river. And once a Master Gardener, always a Master Gardener. So we're open the doors to anybody. The Master Gardener mission, if I could paraphrase it, is really simply to learn something useful that is unbiased and research-based and pass it on to other people. And this, I think this program that we're doing here kind of fits that mission. We're trying to pass on some good information. And again, if you want to sign up or learn more about the Master Gardener program, call your county extension office. Okay?
Good time to mention the hotline?
Yes. Do it.
Civic Garden Center has a hotline if you have a gardening question. It's staffed by Master Gardener volunteers. You can call 513-221-TREE with any question, and if they don't have the answer at their fingertips, they'll research it and get back with you. Or you can email your questions to hotline@civicgardencenter.org.
Okay, very good. Amy?
Yes, Don.
You've been quiet.
I've been listening.
What do you think about all this?
I think it's great. I always enjoy hearing the history, getting a review of the history of how this got started.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
Because this whole gardening concept is such a wonderful thing.
I think it's neat that we have our first show the day after D-Day, and the tie-in with the Victory Garden and all that kind of stuff with the Civic Garden Center.
Yes, it's very good timing.
We have a caller. I'm gonna answer this phone call on the air and see who it is.
Okay.
No, I'm not. That's the office phone. Not going to answer that one. That's fine. There may be somebody in the office. I don't know. Okay. I wanted to mention a couple of events that are coming up this week that people might be interested in knowing about. The Butterfly Show at the Crone Conservatory is going on. It's going on through June 20th, actually. It's from 10 to 5. And I was over there last week for a little while with a group from Landfair Retirement Community, and it was a lot of fun. They've got a butterfly nursery where they start with the chrysalises. I guess they buy those from all over the world and bring them in, and there was some really neat butterflies. If you're going to go do that, I would suggest you wear a flowered shirt and wear some real sweet cologne or
something that smells.
Yeah, Irish Spring. Put some Irish Spring soap in your pocket or something.
Well, you said that they were coating hands with Gatorade?
Yeah, with Gatorade.
So they would land.
Sweet. And the kids were walking around with wet Gatorade fingers with butterflies sitting on them. It was pretty neat.
That's neat. How many varieties would you say they have?
Oh, golly, I don't know.
Countless.
Yeah, I don't know how many. Of course, that's a pretty place to visit anyway.
I love to go there. And, it's beautiful.
They have an area where there's a caged section, and they have some moths in it. So it's not just butterflies. They also have some moths. And one of those moths was just huge. I mean, it had about a 12-inch wingspan or something, and it was really big. So don't wear wool if you're going to go there. Nobody's going to wear wool this time of year anyway.
I don't think so.
So that's something to do this coming week. The other thing that I thought was interesting is, and it's coming up tonight or tomorrow morning, is the Venus transit of the Sun. This is an event that happens. What it is really, it's when Venus passes in front of the Sun, between the Earth and the Sun. And astronomers have only been able to view this five times in the past. The last one was December 6, 1882.
Oh, my.
So it's been a long time.
And what does it...
It looks like a little speck going across in front of the Sun. Of course, don't look at the Sun. There are other ways of looking at it.
And what time?
Well, I'll get to that. The next one after tomorrow is going to be 2012. And then the next one after that is 2117. So it's a pretty rare event.
Yes.
It starts about 1 o'clock a.m. tomorrow morning. and lasts for about 6 hours. So you have to get up in the middle of the night if you want to try to see it. But you can't see it from here until sunrise, and you'll just see the last little bit of it here.
Okay.
But there's a couple of web pages that are going to cover it if you want to see the whole thing. One of them is www.astronomy.no, and they're going to start coverage at midnight tonight and go till 7 a.m. in the morning. The other one is www.exploratorium.edu/Venus. Now, either one of those, you know, you could stay up and watch that. And I'm sure they'll have some kind of programming to go along with it, maybe. But in any event, it's a good excuse for a party if you wanted
Absolutely.
To call it a Venus transit party. That's not particularly important anymore. In the old days when that would happen, they used that to measure or to try to measure the distance between the Earth and Venus because of the parallax. They would look at it from two widely different places on the Earth and do the arithmetic and figure out how far it was from here to Venus. They knew, because of Kepler's laws of planetary motion, they knew the relative distance from the Sun of all the planets, but they didn't have any way of calibrating it. And so this was a way to calibrate it so we could find out the distance from the Earth to the Sun, which is really what they wanted to know, because that's the astronomical unit. And they have since figured out that with spaceships and things like that rather than using this method, because the atmosphere kind of interferes with accurate measurements of these things. But the Sun is about 93 million miles from Earth, which is very important. The Sun not only drives all our gardens here on Earth, but we're very fortunate in that that is just the right distance to give us liquid water on the planet. If we were a little bit further away, we'd be freezing to death all the time, and if it were closer, all the water would evaporate and we'd be a desert. So very fortunate to be just the distance we are. Anyway, that's the garden connection. I want to remind people again, it is unsafe to look directly at the Sun in case it's not cloudy tomorrow morning, which would be unusual. But you can use the little pinhole thing, or you can watch it on, I'm sure they'll probably cover it on TV tomorrow morning too, because it's a fairly rare event. It's almost time to start winding down the program here. It's 8:53, something like that. And I did want to mention some of the future programs that we're going to have on this summer. We're going to have Marvin Durin on. He's agreed to come on to talk about organic gardening, how to get your garden off of drugs. I love that line. That was a book by Carol Rubin that you folks...
Right, she was at the Garden Center on yesterday doing a Wild Ones program.
Yeah, I'm sorry I couldn't do that.
I couldn't either.
Yeah.
Building a community garden with Cincinnati Bell Pioneers.
I was down at Bug Fest, down at Museum Center, promoting compost. So I missed that. But I'm sure it was good. And I love her book title about how to get your garden off of drugs. Jim Hansel's going to be on later on this summer. He's extremely knowledgeable about all aspects of gardening. And I'm not real sure we're going to talk about how flowers work and some of the things to look at different flowers at your garden and how they really work around the natural history of pollination and that kind of stuff. That's pretty interesting. And I'm sure we'll talk about ornamental grasses, too. One of the shows we're going to have is going to deal with garden critters, especially the ones that pose a danger to gardeners, like mosquitoes and the West Nile virus and ticks and things like that, and what we need to do about those. And West Nile is going to be pretty bad this summer, I think. But I've got an entomologist, a fellow by the name of Gregory Dahlem. from NKU is going to come in, I think, and help us talk about that. He was down at the Bug Fest, and he had a display down there of all his flies. He's a fly specialist, and he had just a tremendous collection of flies. And he had a forensic entomology display where he had pieces of chicken, like a chicken leg, and he'd have one just sitting on soil, and he had one in a sock that was sitting on the soil, and he had one underwater, and then he had one that was buried. And he had just put those out fresh, like practically a few hours before. And you pick up this one that was laying on the soil, and you see the maggots under it. And he was showing the kids how the different stages of the maggot, you could tell how long that had been there, you know, and where the maggots come from. They're very localized things. It was really a neat display. But by the time the afternoon hit, it was kind of smelly over there.
Yeah.
But it was good.
Chicken has a tendency to do that.
Right. Another show we're going to have this summer, I think, with Jennifer Radcliffe from Greenfield Plant Farm is going to talk to us about how to shop for plants and how the garden stores shop for plants. Then I'm going to have a show later on to try to take some of the mystery out of nomenclature and tell stories about how some of the plants got their names. But that's just a few of the programs we're going to have coming up. And I think it's about time to thank our underwriter again. This hour, the Master Gardener Hour, was brought to you in part by a contribution from the Greater Cincinnati Master Gardener Association. The mission of the Master Gardener Association is to provide horticultural opportunities for ongoing education, volunteering, beautifying the community, gaining personal development and leadership skills, socializing, and the sharing of knowledge. To learn more about the Master Gardener program in your area, call your county extension office. I want to thank you, Mary Ann, for coming.
Thank you, John.
And you, Amy, for coming and helping. And it's 8:57, and I think it's time to start our music and wind this thing up. And thank you again both for coming. This has been the Master Gardener Hour with Amy and John Duke and Marianne Westendorf. You can listen to the Master Gardener Hour every Monday morning this summer from 8 to 9 a.m. on WAIF Cincinnati 88.3 FM. All we ask is 1 hour a week. We welcome your comments and suggestions, so please send a note to WAIF, 1434 East McMillan Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45206, in care of the Master Gardener Hour. I'll be back next Monday, and our guests will be Master Gardeners Diane and Jack Klassen to talk about America in Bloom. It's only 167 hours from now, so make them count. And